Where's my turban?
I love this movie.
I'm not talking to anybody without a turban. It's part of my religion, to cover my head in respect to God. I'm a Sikh.
Inside Man by Spike Lee.
I said we'll find your turban.
Not an Arab, by the way, like your cops called me outside.
It's a great action film, starring Denzel Washington as a detective. He's sitting across from a Sikh guy known as Vikram, who's just been released from a bank heist hostage situation.
Why can't I go anywhere without being harassed? Get thrown out of a bank. I'm a hostage. I get harassed. I go to the airport. I can't go through security without a random selection.
Bet you can get a cab, though.
Racial jousting, New York style.
Guess it's one of the perks.
When he got the script, actor Waris Ahluwalia, who's also been in a few of Wes Anderson's movies, told me the character as originally envisioned was just some guy called Larry. It had nothing to do with racial profiling. But then Waris, who is Sikh, landed the part, and Larry turned into Vikram.
That wasn't scripted. None of that was scripted.
Waris said on the morning his scene was shot, Spike Lee told him to ditch the script and just improvise. And so, if only for a moment, this big screen thriller veers back into classic Spike Lee territory and a sort of only in New York racial one-upmanship between a black man who has trouble hailing a cab and a Sikh guy whose turban has been taken away from him. Who has the harder time?
I wanted to add a line in there which was just like, you know, yes, I'm the new black guy.
Sikh is the new black. That's actually just a variant of brown is the new black, which a lot of South Asians started saying after 9/11, when all the harassment and racial profiling kicked in. It's a pretty glib thing to say, right? Essentially a bumper sticker that manages, in just a few words, to co-opt several centuries of African-American history and oppression. But the problems faced by Sikhs don't begin with the September 11th attacks.
We regret to announce the death of the Prime Minister, Mrs. Indira Gandhi. She was critically injured.
Back in 1984, armed Sikh separatists were holed up inside the Golden Temple, the most sacred space for Sikhs. In response, the Indian Prime Minister, Indira Gandhi, sent in troops to remove the separatists by force. Months later, the Prime Minister was dead, shot down by her own Sikh security guards. I remember the day of her assassination well because it was Halloween, and as a kid from America, I was asked to talk about this strange holiday in class. Then we all went outside and played cricket, and eventually found ourselves huddled around a radio in the principal's office, listening to the news from the Capitol.
Buses have been burned and Sikhs attacked, and many have gone into hiding.
The Prime Minister was dead. We were sent home for 3 days as the country mourned, and I recall pretty clearly how no actual TV shows aired, just a never-ending stream of doleful music played by these stone-faced performers clutching their sitars. I had no idea what was going on. Thousands of Sikhs were hunted down and killed because with their turbans, they stood out. In the same way that years later, Balbir Singh Sodhi did as he prepared to plant flowers outside his Arizona gas station. He was shot dead and is widely considered the first victim of a hate crime after 9/11. All this history is woven together in the Sikh American consciousness, along with the more recent attacks at a Sikh temple in Wisconsin that left 6 people dead. It's why, as they've scrambled to assert their civil rights, some Sikhs do look to the black experience, and why some blacks might relate to Sikhs. Nanihal Singh is a scholar at Notre Dame and Sikh who grew up in New York. We met soon after the Wisconsin attacks a year ago.
9/11 did a lot personally to help race relations for me. So post 9/11, I've gotten very little hatred from African Americans. Quite the opposite. African Americans have been extraordinarily friendly. Whereas in the past, sure, when I was a kid, some of this hatred would be coming from white people, some of it would be coming from black people. Post 9/11, it's almost entirely from whites. As a matter of fact, blacks will come out of their way to come and nod, and you know, I'll get sort of the bro head nod, that kind of thing going on all the time. And the way I explain this to people is 9/11 seems to have shifted me across the color line from one side to the other.
Now, no one chooses their skin tone. Wearing a turban, though, standing out in an overwhelmingly secular society with a distinct item of clothing, that is a choice. And not necessarily an easy one. This starts in childhood. A lot of Sikh parents worry that their sons will be taunted or beaten up because they wear turbans. So, what keeps the turban going?
Chandi hajar khalam ekal khana.
It's easy enough to understand if you attend a Dastar Bundi or a turban tying ceremony. I recently went to one in Norwalk, Connecticut. The first thing I noticed when I arrived at the Gurdwara, or temple, is the huge American flag draped in the window. It reminded me of all the little flags that popped up on cabs after 9/11. Inside are dozens of Sikh men and women, little kids running around, and Sahajdeep Singh, a 16-year-old with a strong jawline and a thin beard. This ceremony, this whole day, is for him.
It's like the introduction into manhood, I guess, in our religion.
At the appointed moment, Sahajdeep sits on the floor, front and center. His uncle starts winding a long, thin swatch of cloth around his head, until he's crowned with this magnificent sky blue turban, same exact color as the shirt he's wearing. Sahajdeep's dad, Ravinder, and his mom, Sandeep, sit nearby, beaming. It's a sea of turbans. Uncles with long flowing beards and aunties handing over gifts, posing for pictures with the boy. The man. All of this comes with a certain set of expectations.
Well, they expect me to be a little more mature, like with, like around the house, like take care of the like my younger sisters and like help around the house with chores and like other things like setting the table and like taking out the trash.
Because he's always had some sort of head covering, Sahajdeep has been called names before. Osama, terrorist. He shrugs it off. His dad was almost killed by a mob in New Delhi in 1984. And a family friend in his late 70s tells me his family was on a kill list in 1947, during the partition of India and Pakistan. But then you have the sound of Sahajdeep's younger sister singing. I find it almost heartbreakingly sweet. Not just the song or her voice, but the idea that this young girl is right there with the rest of her community singing for her brother. In their eyes, he's now a man and has to act the part. But he'll never be alone.
Yeah, dude, looking good, boss. What a color. What a color.
Yeah.
Join the club.
Join the club. This is Micropolis. I'm Arun Vanagopal at WNYC. This is it.